Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Book Lounge. Today, we are talking about The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone. Your hosts, as always, are myself, Corinne Ritchie.
And me, Tom Butler-Bowden. So what we do each week is take one of the great nonfiction books, a recent one or an old classic, and we dissect it and analyze it and discuss it. And I'll give my take on the book and why I think it's still important and relevant.
Yep, and I will also weigh in on the book and update you on the latest news about the author and the title. And as always, the Book Insights episodes, that's where you want to go for the in-depth explorations of these best nonfiction books. But here in the Book Lounge, it's just an informal chat about the book of the week. This week, we are going to talk about going big in business. So we have a business consultant, a fellow podcaster who has interviewed Grant Cardone himself. He's an entrepreneur, he's an influencer, and he's a TikTok star, if you sprechen the Deutsch. So Dr. Robin Kira.
Thank you very much for having me. Yes, I always try to disguise my TikTok career over here because I'm targeting especially younger people with finance and insurance knowledge, which, you know, is not always suitable for boardroom level discussions. Let's put it that way.
I love it. I love it.
And Robin, you've got this amazing podcast, Digital Scouting Live.
Yeah.
Which looks, you sort of interview a lot of interesting thinkers on it and successful people. So I was just interested how you sort of went from being in a regular sort of corporate field to getting into this whole sort of area.
Yeah, first of all, I need to make a confession. So I'm a recovering insurance sales agent, but don't worry, I won't sell you anything. I've been clean for several years.
Hello, Robin. But
yes, but I still could. I still have my license, so be aware. No, and all kidding aside, I started my career in the insurance industry as a regular sales agent a few years ago. Then I went to several managerial positions in insurance and finance, also in banking. And at some point, I was really annoyed by the insurance industry because I saw old white men on stage saying the internet is going to go away. And I have been to China, to the US. I've been, you know, trying things out. And I was thinking, oh my God, there's a lot of things are going to also come to Europe, to Germany. This industry is totally unprepared and not preparing. And I was really annoyed. And at that point, I was working in the finance industry. So I thought I can actually, you know, rant on stages. So I ranted on stages at conferences and was always very quiet. And my opener always was at that time, if you feel offended by my talk, I mean it. And that gave me a lot of attention, but it was really because I cared about the industry. I wanted that they changed, they modernized, they put emphasis on it. And I also scaled it hardcore on social media, but not because I thought I'm going to be an influencer, but just because I thought it was just, you know, not only reaching 100 people in the room, 200 people in the room, but maybe 250 also on social media. And that scale that exploded over the last years. So at some point, somebody called me an insurance influencer. Funnily, I really Googled at that point if that's something good or bad. I didn't know. It was something good. And now we are, we can say that our articles are read in the industry and that we have a large following, I think 180,000 or something. We have millions of views each month on all different social media outlets. And we just did try and error. So at some point I was started as a one-man show. Then I started to hire a few people. Financing actually by my corporate job at that time and point. And and we started one channel after the other. And here we are a few years later.
That's amazing. I think being able to get a huge reach on something like that is just incredible. So that's awesome. It sounds like you have really done this whole 10X thing, gone big. I like that.
Yeah, for sure.
And so just before we get into the book and so on, I mean, what's the sort of personal development lesson you want to kick off this podcast with for our listeners and viewers that you have found to be pretty useful in your own life?
Well, one of my favorite phrases is eat your own dog food. I found it always quite stunning when I was at the corporate side that we had agencies and consulting companies that wanted to do us things and that they wanted to that we do things but never did it themselves. Or I didn't have a track record in it. So especially coming from the sales front, I always found it quite funny having some big tier consultants having presentations where I was thinking they don't have a clue what's going on in the real world out there where, you know, where the people are trying to sell insurance policies and try to consult clients. So eat your own dog food, what does that mean? We started as a blog, really, you know, ranting on stages. And at some point, insurers came to me, the few people that didn't boo us out of the room. They called us afterwards and said, Robin, please, can you help us? And they gave us the opportunity and they called us because they knew we were really doing the stuff that we were talking about. When we talked about you need to optimize your sales process, when you need to become a personal brand, you know, I was on the way becoming a personal brand, and they saw it on the social medias in Europe, but also on global ones. And I said, you need to share all your knowledge for free. You need to deliver really valuable content, not just sell, but actually, you know, deliver value to your client base. I did that. So that's what I take away. To eat your own dog food. You know, if you want to, as an entrepreneur, really do that. And I was, by the way, if I look at successful salespeople, those people are successful that actually use the stuff they're selling. You wouldn't believe how many people I meet in the sales space that, you know, say, I'm not successful, and they're selling whatever, shoes, cars, insurance policies, and say, when did you use it the last time yourself? And then they say, I don't have one. Well, then you cannot be excited. You know, I'm totally excited about insurance and finance because I live it. And eat your own dog food is something I really recommend. But even if it doesn't come out of, you know, your heart, because you do it because you believe in it, just start doing it, because it gives you authenticity. And by the way, also clients talk to each other. And when they say, no, he really does it, that's the most powerful sales tool ever.
Interesting. So can you give us an example of what is the dog food that you eat?
For example, I always say you need to also try, as a decision maker, as a C-suite, as a board member, in our podcast and video series, we really interview the C-suites of large insurers or billionaires or billion and unicorn founders in insurance and finance. And when I say you guys need to deal yourself, you need to try out LinkedIn or TikTok or whatever, because then you can actually judge when an expert comes to you if the expert is valuable or not. Or when your people present you a strategy, you can evaluate there. But if you have no practical knowledge about yourself, you can be manipulated. And my story is the following. I work for a large insurer. I always say, I mock them and say it's only mid-size insurer, but it's one of the largest over here. I worked for one of the largest here. And I had a very memorable boardroom meeting where I was my below board, and there was the board, the CTO, the chief technology officer of the insurer. And there was a project group presenting the progress from the last 4 weeks, and they actually changed the button in a very bad made app. And everybody was like, oh my god, the hard work you did there in the last 4 weeks. I was like, you know that my intern can do this in his lunch break, you know. I was like really getting, and then I talked to the guy under 4 hours, only him and me in the room, and asked him, how did you like it? Seriously. And he was like, no, it's totally great. And I was like, oh my god, he doesn't have a clue. So I think that's super dangerous as a decision maker. You need to have at least a glimpse of practical knowledge about it. So that's what we do here. I start everything myself, not anymore, but back in the days. For example, TikTok. I found myself arguing against it with my own team, and my own team said, Robin, you need actually to try it out. I say, I'm, you know, I have a radio face. I know it. I'm a 38-year-old white man. Nobody wants to see me dancing. And they said, no, try it out. And then I found myself arguing against them as I heard, you know, insurance CTOs and CIOs talking against me a few years ago. I said, no, Robin, you're on the wrong side of the tracks around here. So I tried it out. And I try a lot out myself. Also tech, maybe voice skills, maybe TikTok. And so I try to also share that then with the decision makers who really value that, that there's somebody who is actually coming from the practice. From Praxis.
That's so impressive. A TikTok on insurance and you can actually get some following. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that is niche. So should we get on to the book? Grant Cardone's, it's called The 10X Rule, The Only Difference Between Success and Failure. I mean, now, Robin, you've been talking about finding a niche and changing things up, doing things differently. But this book, really, it's all about not just doing things differently, or it's just doing them a lot more than anyone else, 10 times more, putting in incredible effort. So just a sort of recap of the book for those who haven't read it or listened to it. So Grant Cardone is an American entrepreneur. His story is his dad died when he was 10. He went off the rails, party hard. At 25, he was in rehab. Then at 29, He sort of started this training business, turned his life around, then got into real estate, finance. He's very wealthy now. I think he was on an undercover billionaire.
Yes.
Just reading between the lines, he's quite a late starter, actually. And he seems to have discovered this 10x rule sort of just in time, or, you know, in his life. But Robin, I mean, how did you, I know you've interviewed him, but did you come to the book before that, or how did you discover this book, and what did it sort of, what was the impact on you?
Yes, so let me start with how I got to know Grant Cardone, and not personally, that came later, but actually as an author or inspiration. At the beginning, I did not like him, I have to be quite honest, because I saw his sales stories and the call to action to book his courses every second sentence in his podcast. I was actually really annoyed, but one, the salesperson and myself, the insurance sales agent and myself, said, Robin, in between the lines, here and there, he drops some stuff that's really worth it, that's really corresponds to my reality when I look at successful people over here in insurance or finance. So I could not dismiss him. That was a big, big, that was a really, and then I said, you know, if I have this feeling that some vibes are negative, but some vibes are positive, I always say, Robin, you need to get to know this person better. And then I went on his podcast. I listened to a lot of podcast sessions there. I bought a lot of books, especially his audio programs. And what I really, at some point, I really found a few programs that were really super helpful, like how to sell on the phone. I mean, I don't sell anything on the phone. We do large scale consulting projects, but the logic behind it is really, really big. And that's when I also then at some point read and bought the 10x rule. And actually, as an audio program, I heard it, I listened to it several times. Even my wife and I on some long car drives, we listen to it. And of course, I do not like every single part of it, but I think it's super inspirational. And I think that's something I really, really like. And we don't only have our consulting company, but we also have a small family-owned real estate business on the side. So I always liked him also for that, even though we're a little smaller. That's really funny. When I interviewed him, he mentioned how many assets under information he had, and I said, "I'm close behind you." I mean, like, not really, but I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I mean, what you say is totally true. Like, self-help motivation, often it can seem pretty icky, some of the messages. It's totally true. You have to sort of dig for the nuggets sometimes, get beyond the sales pitch. And when you do, you're sort of richly rewarded. We've just recorded an episode on the book, The 5-Second Rule by Mel Robbins. And this is pretty similar. Well, there's two different rules, but I think both of these books, they seem a bit too salesy, over the top, maybe a bit lightweight on the surface. But when you get into them, there's some amazing stuff there and really inspirational.
And one last thing that was important for me when I trust an author or not is I look, does he or she have a business beside the writing books and the giving talks?
Absolutely.
And that's always my biggest fear. My biggest fear is people think, oh, I'm a speaker. I'm not a speaker. I'm actually a business person with a consulting company that speaks from time to time. That's a big difference. And when I found out what he really did, and since I'm, you know, as a hobby, I'm on real estate too, I really understood that that's a pro. And then I was really interested, because pros rarely talk and share their concrete nuggets. And that's what made me really excited. And I have given the book away, and also some other books he wrote as presents, like several times. So that's also something. And I rarely do that. And by the way, if you listen to my shows, it can be the superstars who are. I never recommend anything. I recommend actually two people or the content. Both actually didn't need it. You know, Gary Vee, of course, for his social media insights, and Grant Cardone for his sales stuff. You know, you can be multi-billionaire. I don't recommend it. But for these two guys who helped me a lot, I made a lot of money with the teachings of both, especially for Grant. So I think I could pay them back a little bit.
That's great. Well, you paid them when you bought the book, so, you know, that's good.
And so, I mean, what does he actually mean by this 10x rule? It seems to me it's really about expectations, so that most people have sort of average expectations of what they want to achieve, and so you just tend to live up to those goals. But he sort of soon discovered, when he started this training business, that he just wanted to make as much as he had in his previous job, and he wasn't really getting anywhere. And then he thought, you know what, to make this worthwhile, I want to earn like 10 times more. And then in order to do that, he had to make, instead of making two or three sales calls a day or seminars, he had to do 20 or 30. And it sort of seems totally obvious when you think about it that in order to achieve stuff, you just have to create incredible expectations and goals. But actually, most people just don't do it. So I just love the fact that he sort of put it out there that there's no real excuses for anything. It's just about putting in a lot more effort, you know, than the next person.
Well, and I think that it's just sort of a different approach to motivation, because we do a lot of motivational books on this podcast, and each of them have their own little bent on it. And it seems like Grant's sort of push for you is rather than like Mel Robbins of just count down and do it. He's thinking more along the lines of, once you're already doing it, do more. So whatever you effort you thought you were going to need to put in, multiply it by 10, and that's how much you have to do. So it's sort of just a different way of coming to the motivation of setting your expectations for how much work you have to put in and setting your expectations for how much you're going to get out 10 times higher than you think you need to. So that's kind of the gist.
And maybe one more thing, I think in my experience or my perception, he didn't give me a small push. He gave me a good push with a baseball bat, you know,
yes,
in my face.
Yep.
And what I really like about it, that he also does not, you do the motivational rah, rah, I'm going to feel good and everything is fine. But he also talks about all the bad things and things you don't do. And sometimes I see myself there and I'm like, oh, you're, you know, he's talking about you, you know, and when Katja and I listen to it, he's talking about us. And I think that's something also very valuable, that he talks about stories you experience or you see, oh, have I done this too? And also talks about things that say, well, if you do this, you're not going to achieve that very likely. And I think a lot of motivational people who, you know, just have a motivational business, they don't do that because it alienates people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is definitely the opposite of a lot of those habit books. So we've done the like tiny habits, atomic habits, like just, you know, the compound effect, just a little change every day. And over time, it will. This is not that. It's the exact opposite of that. So this is not one little thing that you change. And then over time, no, this is like tomorrow, do nothing but this one thing and do it 10 times harder, 10 times bigger than you think you need to. That's kind of
the, yeah. And I think there are two levels to the 10x rule. One thing is to have the goals, to really increase your goals. And that was really mind-blowing to my wife and me. We had our modest goals we wanted to achieve with our companies. But why not just add a zero there? It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference, but it makes the work you put in, the extra work, by the way, it give a whole new meaning. If you have the potential to reach the 10x or 100x goal. And that's something that changed my mind a lot, to say, why not be bolder with your goals? And Germans are very modest, and not always, you know, but at least a little bit, they have this modest culture, you know, don't aim high. That's the typical German or Central European. So to hear that and to allow the thought, why not just 10x a goal, doesn't hurt you, you know, that's something. And to have the second level, which are the 10x of actions, which is the message a lot of people don't like to hear, is that you can achieve a lot, but you need actually to do it. And that's a lot of hard work. But I could relate to it because I did work a lot already before 10x, 10x rule, and before I met Grant. But I did work a lot before, but this now gives a whole different meaning, actually.
Yeah. Actually, I think the Americans is the opposite. I think they're all about the 10x expectation and goals. They're like, yeah, I'll aim for the sky. But then when it's the work time, then it's like, oh, well, actually, I really only have an hour. So,
yeah, I think applied to business, the 10x rule, I mean, in Silicon Valley, the whole VC area, they're always really looking for a business or a new platform or venture that's going to be 10 times better than what already exists. So not something marginally better. I mean, you know, Facebook was many, many times better than like an on-campus social network. Google search was millions of times better than what existed at the time. So it's just, for me, it's just a great way of approaching problems, businesses, not just for your personal achievement, but just thinking what could be 10 times better than what already exists here. I just find that very inspirational.
Robin, do you have any examples of sort of that 10x, like setting a higher goal, working 10 times harder, and then how it sort of panned out for you?
Yeah, I can actually give two examples. One example is not so much 10x, but also something Grant Cardone, I clicked when he said it. I probably heard it 27,000 times before too. That when he said, if you're an entrepreneur and you can do things traditionally, but he said, you know, why not change? If you want to increase profitability, why not just increase the way your clients pay you? And back in the days, we always were paid after projects or, you know, along the line, which always was a little bit annoying because you need to run after your money, but sometimes not because it's their bad things, but just because, you know, corporate processes take a lot, you know, when you work for multi-billion dollar companies. And what we do now is we say upfront, we give a discount on our fee, and then we get paid upfront. For us, it's a big thing. And I can tell you a funny story. A few days, 1 year ago, a few days before COVID hit, we had several large clients paying the budget for the whole year. And so when COVID hit, I was like, oh, that's quite a comfortable situation. And the CEO said, Robin, my CFO always reminds me in our meetings, you know, the money of Robin and digital scouting is gone. And I just said, well, you ain't gonna get it back. That's story number one. So there's to listen to these unconventional things, and again, it also gets repeated a lot of times. And I think that's also the magic, that you need to hear it a lot of times before it clicks. At least it's with me, you know. And the second thing is when COVID hit, actually. For me, it was clear we could take first we take care of family and kids and all of that, buying a lot of toilet paper, of course. And after that, actually, we went back to business. We said, this is the biggest opportunity ever. Even though a lot of clients, not clients, but leads were suddenly dry and we started from zero, we invented new products, new business lines. We went all in, the whole team. And 2020 may not be personally, but from the business, it was the best year ever. So, and everybody participated, everybody in the team participated. So everybody had a big Christmas party, I think. So that's something we really worked hard. But to be quite honest, I cannot remember March, April, because we were working so much. I cannot remember anything there. So it pays out. It actually pays out if you put in the extra work, especially when you combine it with a large goal. So if you have a large goal, you can put in a lot of work. But again, this only works because our business is running very, very well. There are rewards. I mean, there's other people's businesses currently struggling out there who work a lot. And you know, it's just to survive. In our case, it's a little bit different. But nevertheless, put in 10x, the work really, really, really works.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to touch on also what I thought was almost the more interesting part of this book, which is Grant says that you have to see success as a sort of ethical obligation, as a duty. So you're not just thinking about yourself, but, you know, your family, what they all need in the future, your own personal obligation to yourself. And he sort of gets annoyed with this. People say to him at seminars, success isn't everything. And also that, you know, only some people can succeed and others can't, that it's like a limited thing. So Grant, I mean, I noticed that you had said one of your favorite books was the Gladwell one on Outliers, the story of success. Yeah. So I just wondered, this issue of the ethics and the theory of success and so on, how you saw this book in relation to that.
I would not only bring the Outliers and 10X to the table, but also my wife, you know, and what she once said to me was it's not only about success, but actually to make the most out of it, what you received at the start. You know, one of us did receive a little bit and one of us not. Nothing. And I think that's what was very powerful. And that's what Grant Cardone also says, is it's a duty. But I think his argument is it's a duty because if you are not successful, you get eaten. There is no peaceful middle. And that's things I think some we learned all in 2008. I think that's the financial crisis there. I think that's what we learn currently in the pandemic crisis. So if you have not a lot of protection walls in front of you, and wealth is a protection wall, then, you know, winter can come and you have a big problem. And in order to protect you, your family, then you need to achieve great things and, you know, maybe have 10x times the assets and value you actually thought would be needed to live a peaceful life. And something that's also morally in that discussion is really why not try to get the most out of your potential? And I think that's something I really also like that was underlying in this 10x, and I think Grant Cardone meant it also in that way. Why not try to reach your maximum potential? I mean, of course, if we compare us with others, it's always very hard because we never know what the, you know, true feelings and situation is. But we can compare us with one person for sure, and that's ourselves. And to try to make the most of ourselves, that's something super attractive, at least for me.
Yeah, I like that idea too of success as a duty, and like you said, thinking about it as a protection. I think if you think of it as an extra, an option, a bonus, an icing on the cake kind of a thing, then it's easy to write off as like, well, I don't need X, Y, and Z. But I like that reframing of it is it's protection for you, it's a protection for your family, and yeah, and it's a duty. It's something that you should do. You should rise to your highest potential, like morally, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're not doing it and the crisis hit, then you're super vulnerable. Right. And I don't like to be vulnerable. You know, there's also a nice quote in Wolf of Wall Street where he says, you know, I've been poor, I've been rich. I choose rich every single time. Mm-hmm. I can feel that, you know, mm-hmm. Even though I, you know, do not support the character there in general. But I think it's a nice thing. And I think a lot of people underestimate it. But I don't want to sound like a smart, you know, so smart as I'm not sure if I can say this on the podcast. I don't know the better translation. So, you know, everybody needs to decide that for him or herself. But it resonated to me because I was on the path anyway, as a company, but also as a family. And I think that gave me a lot of, you know, meaning that we are not totally crazy. Because the thing is, if you work more than everybody else, if you start to have success a little bit more than anybody else, probably it's you guys the same with Grant, with me, people start to look at you as if you're a little weird, you know, and people in my case where they always get me is when they say, oh, you don't spend so much time with your family. I say, yes, I do. I do it even more, but maybe not on Saturday, but maybe on a, you know, Monday afternoon. And that gives a lot of meaning, I think, to really say that.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something there, which is also in the book, which is fascinating. He sort of, I'm not sure he uses the word taboo, but he sort of talks this phrase, normal levels of action. Yeah. And it's a trap that most people just do the normal levels of action because that's what's socially acceptable. But they never really realize that by taking that socially acceptable route, they're sort of selling themselves short. So I think he's trying to raise the bar so that this sort of extra effort becomes the norm and it becomes more socially acceptable, you know, because no one ever died of hard work, as the saying goes. And, you know, you know with kids that it's better for their long term if you sort of drive them to do stuff than just, you know, let them play with their computer all day long or something. So I don't know what you guys think about that, about the societal conditioning in relation to success.
Yeah, I like what Grant Cardone says about average being a formula for failure. Because just like you're saying, Tom, where if you just do what is expected, what's socially acceptable, what's the current status quo norm, then there's a good chance that you aim for that. You may not hit it. And immediately below average is mediocrity. It's failure. It's like Robin said, it's being eaten. There's no real coasting. There's no middle. So I do like that idea of if you aim for average, you're going to end up aiming for failure. So aim for bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and have a look at what does average actually mean. That doesn't shall not sound arrogant, but if you look at the statistics, I know the numbers for Germany, the average or the median wealth is $35,000, or the median is like a sort of different weighted average is $35,000 in a population over 18. That's nothing. I mean, that's money. But if you look at people working years and years and years for that, you're super unprotected with it. I mean, I think 30% don't have a net worth of zero, and you know have of the population has less than $10,000 saved. That's a disaster in a country that actually is proclaimed to be one of the richest in the world. And but what do you think when you do average things that you then reach average? And when we talk about numbers, then people are like, oh my God, that's not enough. And on the other side, if you put in the extra work, you have higher goals. Actually, it works. I mean, me or my wife, we will not work until retirement. That's already sure for. It's already now for sure. But we also paid a price for it, and we did a lot for it. So let's not only talk about the negative, what happens when you do average things, but let's talk about the fruits that actually can happen. And the dream for everybody is different, but I think that's. And one more thing I want to add to the 10x rule is I actually had this insight before I met Cardon, but I think he liked the story. Is one the most magical moment I had in my life as entrepreneur was when I understood. I was sitting at the desk, not this one, another one, and I wrote a bill. And I remembered one of my first bills I wrote, which had a little bit less amount on it. And I said, Robin, if you write a bill about $1,000, or if you write a bill about $100,000, the effort is the same. And I was like, this clicked.
It's true. And I think that's a point that Grant Cardone makes as well, is it's your time, it's your effort, it's your energy, you're going to put it in anyway. So why not put it in for bigger rewards rather than smaller ones?
Absolutely. Well, should we, Robin, we always give a vote out of 5 for a book, and we say why every week. Corinne, do you want to start, kick us off?
Sure. Yeah. So I give this book 3 out of 5 bookmarks. I see the value. I love the idea of think big, because if you can't see it, you can't be it. So if you're not even thinking big, there's no way you can ever achieve big. So I like the idea of inspiring people. And I like that he includes the flip side of not just dream big, but all of the hard work that's necessary to get there. But I take off the 2 bookmarks because nothing about work-life balance, nothing about, you know, the other book insight we've done on why we sleep, like nothing about you need to get those 7 minimum hours per night. And like, you know, those kind of balance things are not there. Kind of similar to Can't Hurt Me. I feel like it lacks that balance of where do you draw the line to where you're, you know, Can't Hurt Me was like, your body is nothing. You can just destroy it in order to reach your goal. And I kind of feel like this is sort of the opposite of like, your life is nothing. Destroy it in pursuit of your business goals. So those are my 2 cents on that. Yeah,
I'm with you there. I'll give it 3 out of 5 as a book. When I was reading it, I found it inspiring, but I was thinking this could make a lot of people go to burnout. So it's sort of counterproductive in the end. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, the best way of using this book is as a sort of a thinking framework to set bigger goals and dream bigger. And you can still have your work-life balance, but it doesn't hurt to have higher ambitions. It just means giving yourself perhaps a longer time frame to achieve them. So I think that's how, for me, you can reconcile the work-life thing with still being very successful. Robin, how would you vote and why?
Well, I give it 5 out of 5 because it had a very large business impact on myself and the money. So I made too much money to be now, you know, to be too tight with the bookmarks.
Yep.
So I think that's okay.
That's fair.
But I really like that it's motivational, that it talks about also the things you need to do, and it's not just rah-rah. It has also, if you look at other books from him, super concrete steps and help. So it's not just, you know, overall cloudy talk. The one thing that I would tendance to, maybe I say a little minus, 5 minus I would put there is a lot of times to up and cross-selling. But again, he's a salesperson, so I think I would not expect anything else. But, you know, in the end, it's about to read a lot of different books or to be a lot of different podcasts, for example, like this one, and to really expose yourself to a lot of experts and people and insights and to draw your own conclusions out of it. And I think that's the magic thing there. Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you. So, Corinne, what do we know about Grant, what he's up to at the moment? Because this book came out in 2011.
Yep. So it's a 10-year-old book, but, you know, people are still buying it. People are still, you know, following Grant Cardone for sure. He's definitely a big influencer, still speaking and traveling and doing all these like big conferences to get people, you know, on board with this 10X rule. So in total, he's written 8 books, which have all been translated into dozens of languages. He leads these 10X Academy workshops. He also did a 10X challenge just this past fall to raise money for those affected by the pandemic. As Tom mentioned, he was on Undercover Billionaire, this like TV show. And he actually just raised over $8 million on Clubhouse. So that new app, he's on it doing different speeches and stuff. And yeah, he had 5,000 members immediately join his 10X Club Clubhouse room. And right now, if you have just the small sum of $250,000 ready to invest, you can hop on in on that 10X challenge that he's got now, which is his current offering. So if you got that lying around, then hop on in, 10X.
That's great. Robin, for people listening, how do they learn more about you, or where should they go to learn more?
Well, to learn about our business, go to digitalscouting.de. So if you are an insurer, bank, or traditional company that wants to modernize new strategy or also get to know how to use social media in an adequate way, then go there. If you want to have a look in our research and development department, then download TikTok and have a look at our TikTok channel there. But I warn you, 90% German content, 10% English. But I think you get a good impression. Let's put it that way.
It's true. Yeah, I checked out the TikTok. I'm like, why? My Deutsche, so weak, so weak.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. And so make sure you listen to the book insight that we have on the 10X rule, where we go into more detail, a bit more analysis. Let's chit chat. We break down into like the 4 main themes of the book. I think we usually have sort of little clips, interviews with the author as well. So make sure you listen to that as well as joining us here in the Book Lounge.
Yep, that's right. And as always, you can check us out on YouTube or on any of the socials. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Book Insights Pod. Check us out again next week for a new Book of the Week. Thank you so much, Dr. Robin Kira, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Robin.